Welcome to another episode of Classic Racing Stories on the Marshall Pruitt Podcast. This time we have my man, Dorsey Schrader, telling one of my all-time favorite racing stories. Dorsey is he is a heck of a character, a master storyteller. First time that I heard his tale about the 1991 IROC race at Talladega, I was crying laughing along with my other speed colleagues, Lee Diffie, Calvin Fish. We were sitting in the TV compound at Le Mans 2008 in these little tiny, tiny trailers. They're more like mobile huts. I mean, you couldn't take a shower in one of them if you wanted to. There's just not much space, but they're perfect for huddling in there when it gets cold at night to tell stories and lies. And Dorsey uncorked this one about this 1991 adventure. Relatively famous from back in the day. I thoroughly recommend searching Dorsey Schrader IROC Talladega 1991, and the visuals behind this wild tale, as only Dorsey could tell it. I love it. So having a podcast and having Dorsey as a fun colleague, my first ever TV appearance was with him at I think 2006 at a World Challenge race, sitting in the booth with him. Took great care of me. That was a lot of fun. And so we've just had a wonderful relationship for however many years. And finally, with a little bit of downtime at the Intercontinental GT weekend / World Challenge finale, where he serves as race director for World Challenge, we sat down and did some storytelling. So I'm starting all this stuff off with this classic racing story of Dorsey's. And I've split our sit down into four items. What you're going to have following here is a bit of life and origins from him, and we're meant to do a second part of that as soon as we can. Frankly, we were supposed to record all this back in March, but both of our schedules went a little sideways. I broke another piece out, which was Q&A that Diffie, Brian Till, and a few other of our Speed/Fox colleagues said, all right, got to get Dorsey to tell you the stories that we've been keeping secret for a little while, so there's some coming that I believe even in this episode might be a few earmuffs moments if your ears are sensitive to adult conversation. And then finally we close with this four-part Dorsey Schrader overload with something we lovingly call Dorseyisms. And that is a ongoing list, a spreadsheet compiled by the great Fox/Speed producer Rick the Rat, Rick Ratajak, of all of Dorsey's made-up phrases, sentences that make no sense, malapropisms, you name it, over decades on TV. And Rick and others, it's actually become a bit of an art of jotting down the latest Dorseyism that goes into the list, into the archives. So thanks to Rick, he actually gave me the list, and so I went through them with Dorse, and there's some others in there from Diffie, from Till, from Cal, you name it. So anyways, Dorsey's just, he's a big enough of a character and personality, a sweetheart of a guy, always the first to make fun of himself. And so that's why we have four parts of Dorsey Schrader all together dropped today on Monday. Starting off here with this classic racing tale. All right, you can get every episode of the Marshall Pruitt Podcast on iTunes, on Podbean, on the Marshall Pruitt Podcast Facebook page, and on my marshallpruitt.com personal site. All that said, let's roll into what I hope is going to become one of your favorite racing stories. Dorsey Schrader, IROC, 1991 Talladega, and everything going upside down.
Please set the stage and tell us the story.
Well, we had a race for the second year at IROC, and it was at Talladega, which I'd run before.
Monster track,
and the car numbers were impressive. I think we were running the group as a pack was able to run in the 195 or 6 range. But it's not that you can feel it, but, I mean, they were really fast. They were
flying.
And the cars were pretty stable. And one thing I'd learned after the 2 years of IROC, even though the cars were very, very similar, almost nearly equal, sometimes one would be happier than the others. And by happier, I mean it was able to go places the others couldn't. Everybody could run the same speed, but sometimes you had to stay with somebody to do it. But some cars sometimes would be able to move up to the upper lane or lower lane and make passes, easily, where it was a lot harder for the others. This particular day, I got that car. But it had been raining off and on all morning, and I think our race was really early in that morning. So we started the race the first time, and I think I started third.
And who all's in there? We got
up. Well, it was up front. You had Allenser Jr. and you had Earnhardt Sr., which they were good friends. You had Mark Martin, Rusty Wallace, and me. You had Martin Brundle and Jeff Brabham. And I'm trying to think who the IndyCar guys were.
Maybe Danny Snow.
It could have been Danny. It was all pretty good.
But beasts. Just
beasts,
super every
one beasts.
Of them.
And the start happened, and I went right to the front. And it went to the front easy. And then it starts raining, so they stop, and we got to start over. I went, but I was leading. Nope, it's like nothing happened because it's made for TV,
yes.
So we do it all over again. So the second start starts, and I go right to the front again, And maybe I shouldn't have that time. Well, never know that it's going to stop again, but so it stops again. But what's become apparent to all my buddies around me is my car seems to be pretty strong.
Yes.
So everybody now wants to be with the lime green car.
It could be a little bit of a rough, and this might have been a for TV thing, but no one was taking this lightly. There were no clean fenders.
No, this was a rough tumble race. It was showing to be that way right off the thing. People were really wanting to get going on the championship end of it. So the race starts, and right away, Unser and Earnhardt tag team, and when they tag team, they push themselves clear of everybody else. Mark Martin and I are together, and Rusty Wallace is off to the side. And I went with Rusty first, and then Mark started getting a run, so after he cleared me, I dropped down with Mark, because we were both Roush guys. So I started bump drafting with Mark, which leads us forward, up away from that. Well, Brabham in the back, and Scott Pruitt got hooked up, and those two are running the high side, and they come sailing up into the deal.
Wow.
And it didn't last long. I think we were on the second or maybe third lap.
People are moving back and forth.
And everybody's doing the big shuffle, but people are pairing up and moving around a lot, And so I'm down there on the bottom line, but I see the top line is really coming fast. And the top line looks like it's got Pruitt in it, and it's got Brabham in it, and I've got a run going, so I moved up. And so when I moved up, I cleared Mark Martin right away, and then Pruitt came up behind me and, was going to help. And we start sailing up, and I'm just clearing the nose of Earnhardt and going up into the lead. And Pruitt comes up, and he hit me, but he didn't hit me really center. He hit me off the right side, and it wiggled the car really hard, turning it nose down, So I put opposite lock in it, and we broke apart for a minute, and it shook and came back in position, but then he hit it a second time. And this time when he hit it, it lifted the back of the car up off of the ground.
and
it just turned it. And I start to go down, to spin down the hill, and I had full opposite lock in it. And I'm just about to slam the brakes on and end it all. And Earnhardt hits me right in the door, So now I've got full right-hand steering in it, and I'm trapped sideways to the wind. And I look over, and it's like looking at him right there. He's just looking straight at me, and I've got all the steering in. And it starts to push the nose back in the right direction. I went, this might still
almost
be good.
It.
Then I felt the worst feeling I've ever felt. I felt the car started to take, it was before the roof laps. It was the last year. And the car started to do the aero flip. And when it lifted the passenger side up into the air. And it got real quiet, And all the vibration from the steering and the road surface went away. And I knew what it was. I knew instantly. I said, oh, no. But it didn't fly yet, but came back down, landed again. I went, thank God. Then it went all at once like a tornado. It went, and I mean, I went instantly upside down world. And I remember my dad had a good buddy that drove a sprint car, and he always told me, if you know that you're about to have a big flip and you have time to do it, he goes, let go of the wheel, put your hands on the bottom of the wheel, and pull it toward your nuts. And he goes, cross your legs and get as low as you can and hold on. And I knew it was going to flip because it was already upside down flying. And I rolled up over the top of Earnhardt's car. We actually met roof to roof. And I've got a picture of his car on the track with my car on top of it.
Were you knocking, saying hello to your buddy?
But I'm down as small as I think I can get. And I slide down his rear window, which took a spoiler off, and then it hit. It hit the ground, and then it did this really violent flip. And it flipped like 1.5 times really fast. And somehow, at that point, I still kind of knew where I was at. And I knew that, we were running 196, and I had a lot of little straightaway left before. So it flips, a couple of real hard flips, and then it comes down on Little Al's hood, which broke the momentum for a minute, you know. And I remember it got quiet again, and then it hit really hard. And when it got hit really hard, the rear roll bar brace shoved in, hit my helmet. So that's when I found out I could get lower yet in the car. So I went down there, and that hit kind of knocked me sort of unconscious, not totally, but it was a big hit. So it finishes its flip. It goes down in the infield, and it's ripped. It's upside down as it goes down in the infield, and the windshield's gone, the driver's door's gone.
And you're
the
on your roof at this back. Point? Are you still on your roof at this
point? Yeah, I'm still on the roof, and we go into this huge mud puddle, which is a lake. It's on the back straightaway. And I feel all this. I didn't know what it was, but I feel everything's hitting me in the chest, and I'm in a little ball. I'm just getting pelted to death, you know. And I'm down there, and it's wet. And I'm like, and finally it flips back, and it lands on its wheels. And I know it's on its wheels. And so I started thinking about fire. I went, okay, that was gnarly. I think the wreck's over now because I'm on my wheels. So I popped my head up to look out the windshield, and I was just about to hit the infield wall.
Oh,
it was like from me to you, and I went, ah! Back down. Not yet. So I go down. So when it hits the infield wall, it slides down through there. Water's coming in everywhere. Finally, it comes to a stop, you know. And I'm kind of knocked out on my feet. You know, I look out the windshield, and there's steam, which isn't fire, but it looks like smoke. You know, so I'm like, I got to get out of this thing. And so, like, I reach down to feel for my belt, I mean, my lap belt, and I cannot feel anything. I went, oh, no, this isn't good. I can't feel nothing down here. You know, I'm like, I don't want to even look, you know. And then I finally feel the latch. I release the latch. I went, well, that's good. You know, so I look out my helmet. I can't see anything. And I'm like, I'm blind. You know, I'm like, I can't see. And I'm looking, but I can see a little bit of light over here and over here. It's like my visor's been ripped off. My whole helmet is packed with mud. You know, the whole opening is completely full of mud. So I like to go, ooh. And I pull this mud out. And I'm not blind. I'm all right. You know, so. So I go, I'm going to get out, take the window net down. The window net's gone. And I say, where's the window net? So I'm going to go climb out on the door. Where's the door? So can't climb out on the door. So I sat on the side of the roll cage inside the door. And I swung my legs around to get out. And I look and I'm in a lake. You know, and I'm like, I'm not getting out in the lake. You know, somebody's got to get me. And I said, now I can tippy toe along and not get too wet. So when I got out of the car, I could hear the fans all cheering because I got out. So I'm like waving at them, but I'm not seeing them. And it's very much like I'm really, really drunk and the cops just pulled me over and I'm trying to act like I'm sober. But I'm really not doing that good at it, you know. So I'm like, I'm good. I wave at the crowd and I'm inching my way down the car, what's left of it, looking at it. And I'm not seeing it, but I'm looking at it like maybe it's not that bad, you know. I go around the corner of the car, everybody's cheering, and I see car's just
there's nothing there,
nothing, and it's steaming. So I see this blue, or it's like a army green van, and it backs up to the wall, which is in front of me. There's a, you know, it's up an elevated thing, and it's the ambulance, and it's packed over. So I walk over to the ambulance, and they swing open the back doors. It was double doors, and inside there is this nurse, and she's a big lady, and she opens the door and she goes, oh. She looks at me, and I don't know what I look like yet, you know. I'm like, I look back at her.
Oh, my God.
And she goes, honey, you ain't getting in here looking like that. So she hands me a bottle of Evian and a towel. She goes, you clean yourself up. It's like, all right, you know. So
rejected from the ambulance.
So I'm like cleaning myself up. And so I get in, and she's got her gurney with the little white towel sheet thing. And she goes, you sit down right there and don't move. So I sit there. They drove me to the infield hospital. Open the two doors, and they open the back door to walk in there. And so as soon as they open the back door and I step out, I'm walking in, I see Little Al's in there.
Looking like a mud zombie.
And I am covered, head to toe. Little Al's got his driver's suit open, and they're checking his heart rate. And he looks at me, and he falls off of the gurney onto the floor, holding his chest, laughing. He's, oh, my God, you know, what the heck happened here? You know, and I'm like, what's so funny, you know? I don't think it's funny. Earnhardt drove back to the pit. So anyway, I got in there, and I had no idea. I mean, I was so packed in mud. The only place it wasn't mud, and those IROC suits were white. the two shoulder harness belts were still white, and where that seat belt was still white, and everything else was completely packed in mud. And so after I got out of that thing, and I wasn't hurt, I had a little chunk of skin missing from my hip bone where the seat belt got me, but I left the infield infirmary, and I think either IRA or ARCA practice, or maybe it was cup practice, had already gone out. So I was walking back toward the Iowa Rock trailer, which put me right through the pit lane. And so every one of the drivers, everybody turned around. Everybody's like, holy cow. Everybody's running up to me going, you all right? You okay? You know, and I remember Red Farmer came up to me, and he says, he was on me about going down to Alabama and going to dirt track racing. He goes, boy, he goes, that's not what I meant by dirt track racing. Yeah, it was a big moment. I mean, one of the bigger wrecks. It still makes all the highlight reels. And, you know, if you Google Dorsey Schrader, there's 24 or 5 pages. But number one on the first page is that IROC flip.
And that was good old Dorsey Schrader. And I think by far his most classic racing story. But there's more. And the next part, the Q&A podcast, it's not that long, it's only about 5-6 minutes, but yeah, there is some seriously not safe for work content in there. But nonetheless, I mean, look, we are adults, we have free will. If you just want to have some laughs and just shake your head in disbelief, that one should be some fun. The Dorseyisms podcast, for me at least, is just brilliant. There's some phrases in there. If you're a young, well, I guess any age, but especially if you're a young broadcasting student, you have a desire to make a living in sports, calling sports, color analyst, or otherwise, your professor would probably tell you, don't listen to the Dorseyisms episode. I would say the opposite. Listen to it, because you can get any stiff asshole to read something off a teleprompter or call something in a very highly polished voice. It's another thing to just have a beautiful, beautiful guy like Dorsey just saying whatever comes to his damn mind. And, you know, motor racing, it's a sport. It's competition. It's pressure. It's intensity. You also need a pressure release valve. And that's what Dorsey has been for so long. That's why so many of us love him. And those Dorseyisms are just, you know, they cement the fact that this guy truly is his own man. He says whatever comes to mind, and Lord bless him for it. And then finally, the fourth item is just going to be his life and career. His Origins podcast, as you might have heard. I love doing those, getting to know folks about where they came from, how they were raised, and then get into how they got into the sport. Dorsey's done so much that we definitely need to do a part 2, could even be a part 3. So, all right. So this one's down. You got a couple more crazy bits from Dorse to enjoy. I hope you do. I am Marshall Pruitt. This is a Marshall Pruitt podcast. Thanks for listening.